One of my greatest values and priorities for holding both is to foster community. I offer multiple support and process groups that are held from the vantage point of an occupational therapist who specializes in mental health and women's health. I call these my support circles. In May, the Complete Circle begins. This group is tailored to those deciding to end their secondary infertility journey without a second child. This will be a safe space to hold gratitude for motherhood as it is, even though it looks different than one might have pictured initially. The topic of this podcast aligns with the theme of this group. If this is relatable to you and you would like more information, please email me at allie@holdingbothllc.com. That is allie@holdingbothllc.com, or follow the link in the show notes to learn more. Hi, my name is Allie. Welcome to the Secondary Infertility Podcast. I'm an occupational therapist with training in mental health, women's health, and health literacy. I experienced secondary infertility and loss myself, and I know that there is complexity in holding both the joys of motherhood and the pain and yearning that comes along with infertility at the same time. I want to be a conversation catalyst for this very important topic. Welcome. I'm glad you're here. Hello, and welcome back to the Secondary Infertility Podcast. Today, I'm lucky to be here with Nikki Brooker. She is a wife, mom of one, speech-language pathologist, travel lover, hiker, sports fan, go Bills, coffee lover, and a puppy mom. Today, we will be talking about her secondary infertility story, which led into IVF. IVF did not work for her and her family, and this is her story. Welcome, Nikki.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Of course. So I wanted to start off, you said you are a mom of one. I wanted to know how old your son is and just a little bit about motherhood.
Yeah. So my son, Jensen, is 5 and he is just my favorite person in the world. He's funny. He's empathetic. He's silly. He's smart. And he's the light of our lives right now. We actually had him early. He was 5 weeks early. So he's kind of been through the ringer as far as the medical and things like that. But he's just thriving now. And it's awesome. We feel really lucky to have him.
That's amazing. And you're a working mom. Yes. You are a speech language pathologist. Can you tell us some about that?
Yeah. So I knew I wanted to work with kids. I love kids. I grew up with my mom doing a daycare. So I knew that kids would be a part of my life in pretty much every facet. So I went to school for speech pathology undergrad and then got my master's and started working in elementary schools right away. The current school that I'm at, I've been there for about 10 years, 9 or 10 years, and I love it. I love my kids that I work with. Yeah, they're amazing. I actually worked on the side to do a couple of preschool visits with kids after school. So kind of my day is full from 7:30 until bedtime with preschool to school age kids.
That's amazing. I have such respect for speech language pathologists. Being an OT, occupational therapist myself, I work alongside speech language pathologists, and I really admire what you all do.
My sister's an OT, so I definitely get that. And I worked pretty closely with OT in my school. So it's just nice to have that, those perspectives.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really cool that your sister's an OT. I don't know if I knew that. That's really cool. And then can you tell us about speech coffee inclusivity?
Yeah. So when COVID hit, we were obviously all quarantined and I was doing speech therapy virtually from home. And Jensen was 1 at the time. And my husband was working like at work for most of it. So most of the day was me doing visits online and taking care of a 1-year-old at the same time. So by the time Greg, my husband, got home, I was like, okay, I need a break from kids. I need a break from something. So I had seen another person, a teacher, her Instagram is East Nash Teachers. And she has like the cutest graphic tees. And I was like, oh, I'd love to do that. And kind of gear it towards speech therapists instead of teachers. And then I started seeing a bunch of people posting like diverse and inclusive children's books. And I just fell in love with that. So I made shirts for a while, which I really liked doing. And then once we kind of came out of the COVID quarantine, I kind of turned the page more into being like a diverse and inclusive base, especially children's books that I love so much. And it's also how I use that platform to kind of connect with people going through infertility and secondary infertility, which has been so helpful.
Yeah. So your handle is at Speech Coffee Inclusivity, right?
Yes.
Okay. So follow her if any of these things apply to you. If you're a speech language pathologist, if you're going through secondary infertility, or if you're interested in anything that she has to share, I think I love the things that you share about the children's books. I'm sure your son has a lot of good books on his shelf.
Oh, he does. He does. And lots. We borrow a lot from my school, too. So he really has like a couple nice little libraries. It's awesome.
That's so sweet. I love that. Yeah. So let's get into your secondary infertility story as much as you feel comfortable sharing. I think that your story is so powerful. And I think that many women in my community will have a lot in common with your story. And I think it's really, really brave of you to share it. And I'm really excited to just get into it and have our listeners hear everything.
Yeah. I feel sometimes when I tell this story, I think people are kind of like, wow, that's like a cautionary tale. I don't want that to happen. I don't want that to be me. So I know it sounds a little scary, maybe to someone going through IVF for the first time, or even if you're on your last transfer, you don't necessarily want to end with the result that we did. But I think it's important to know that that is a possibility, because I didn't. I think I knew in the back of my mind that, you know, it may not happen, but every story that I had heard was IVF is kind of a last resort, but it'll get you that baby that you are working so hard for. So we had to have an intervention to have Jensen. We used Clomid just for 1 month, and it was kind of a very lucky, miraculous thing that we had him and we got him. Even our doctor at the time was like, that's literally a miracle. That doesn't happen on like your first try with Clomid. So, you know, 2 years later, we're like, all right, we're ready to give Jensen a sibling. We want at least one more, maybe two more. Yeah. So we start trying again and it doesn't work. We go back to the same doctor and we're like, okay, we'll just have to do the same thing we did last time. No big deal. We'll make it work. And it didn't. So we were referred to a fertility doctor, and where we live, it's such a small town. The closest fertility doctor to us is in Vermont, which requires you to, and it's like a whole thing to go over. Like you have to pay for the ferry. It takes longer. It's like an hour, a little over an hour both ways. And then the appointment time. So all my appointments were like cutting in work.
You had to take a ferry every appointment you went to?
Whoa. Yeah. We were in the thick of it. It was a ferry ride every other day for like 2 weeks for appointments. It was great.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So we started off just doing IUI, thinking like, okay, this, you know, this will probably work, just a little more intervention than last time. And when that didn't work, I was like, sign me up for IVF. Let's just do it. Let's get it done. Yeah. Hate needles, but I was like, we can, we can figure this one out. So
how many, you know, IUIs did you do?
I think we did three. Okay. Two or three.
And I think an important detail, too, is that you didn't have insurance coverage for your IUIs, did you?
We did for our IUIs. Okay. And we did for the first three transfers of IVF, but that was it. Yeah, it didn't cover like testing embryos. It was basically just retrieving the embryos or the eggs, making the embryos, and then three transfers and then done for life.
Okay.
So we moved to IVF, which we had pretty good results from the start. We had a lot of eggs. We had a lot of embryos, and they were super hopeful that it would work. There was really kind of no reason showing that it wouldn't, which was also hard because we were considered, what's the word for it?
Like a straightforward case.
Well, there was no reason.
Yeah.
You know,
unexplained infertility.
Unexplained.
Yes. Okay.
So we did the first transfer and it was a chemical pregnancy, which was heartbreaking, absolutely heartbreaking. But it kind of gave us a tiny bit of hope that like, okay, we got pregnant. Maybe it was the embryo that we chose or something. We moved to the next one and it just didn't work at all. So at that point, I kind of started fighting for a few more tests, which we did a Receptiva test and that came back positive for inflammation. Mm-hmm. They treated me with Lupron for that. And then we did our last transfer, second to last, our third transfer. We transferred two embryos knowing that it wouldn't be covered by insurance after this, and it came back positive. We were so excited. We told just like our closest friends and family, and everyone was like beyond, like everyone cried. This was like everyone's baby.
Yeah. We got all
so involved in this. So the for 7 weeks, like we did blood tests, everyone, everything kept increasing, back positive still. Everything looks good. Everything looks great. So we went in for our ultrasound at 8 weeks to see if it was one baby or two babies. And I'll never ever forget it. I saw like two empty circles on the screen. And I was like, maybe I just don't know what I'm seeing. I don't know. Yeah. And I'm sorry, I don't have good news for you. And we just lost it. Like we were just,
yeah.
My husband was shattered. I was shattered. It was kind of just like, I didn't even know what to do. Like that hadn't even crossed my mind because everything was coming back positive.
Yeah.
So we talked to the doctor and she said it's called a blighted ovum, which also I had never heard of, which it was basically your body is like, yes, you're pregnant. So we're going to make the placenta. We're going to increase all these hormones that you need to support a pregnancy, but the embryos had stopped growing. So essentially kind of tricked us into thinking we were pregnant for 2 months.
So you had two blighted ovums?
Yep.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yes, it was. That was brutal. Again, that was not anything I had ever heard of. I didn't have any like bleeding or anything like that. So no signs of anything happening. So at that point, you know, we're kind of numb. And I was like, I just need to move on from this one, and did a medicated miscarriage, which lasted a lot longer than I also knew could be possible.
Yeah.
And then we went forward with testing remaining embryos, knowing that we were paying out of pocket for any other transfers that we were going to do. So we did that testing. We had four embryos left. And the doctor and nurse even kind of, they said, of course, do whatever you feel comfortable with. But we don't see with your age and, you know, risk factors and everything going on that there would be an issue with any of the embryos. And unfortunately, we did the testing and there was only one normal embryo out of the four.
Wow.
So, yeah. So we decided to transfer that last one, the normal one. Fingers crossed, it's normal. Everything looks good. We were treated with Lupron, everything that, you know, checked every single box, and it did not work.
That had to be the hardest blow.
It was the hardest blow of the whole process, just kind of knowing that it was done. And, you know, people gave a lot of suggestions of like how we could, I don't know, not raise money, but take out loans and different things that we could do. But the cost that we would have to put into another round of IVF, not knowing if it would work, was not an option really for us.
Yeah.
So we, at that point, that was about a year ago, took some time off. We did a couple more IUI cycles just to kind of see. I did actually end up having a laparoscopy and they did find endometriosis, which I had wondered about for a while, but there weren't any outward signs of it. So that gave us a little sliver of hope that maybe this is just what we needed to do. But unfortunately, it did not end in a positive result for us. So we're kind of at the point of moving on as a family of an only child when that was not the plan.
Yeah. Gosh, I'm so sorry to hear about all that you went through in terms of the IVF, but then the losses, the blighted ovum, the miscarriage. It's just, you've been through a lot.
Yeah.
And I think it's really big that you're sharing this. And so after your IUIs, how did you know the third one was the end? Like, how did you know the third one was what you were?
I think we kind of put in our heads, like, how many are we going to actually do of the same thing over and over and over? And we both had kind of felt like three was the magic number. Everything looked good from the outside. You know, we'll do three that look like they should work. And if they just don't, they just don't. And Jensen's getting older. You know, he just turned 5. So at this point, that would be a pretty big age gap. And I'm getting older too. So we feel like maybe at this point, we're going to try to focus on doing some fun trips. We all really love to travel. So kind of putting our our time and money and effort into that instead.
That's amazing. I'm sure there's so much to work through with moving forward and in a motherhood that you weren't expecting, in the picture that you weren't expecting. But I think it's really valuable that you bring up the things that you are able to do and like what you're looking forward to and the experiences that you're able to give him. And many women in my community will bring up travel as something when they are deciding to end, as an opportunity to travel in a different way than they might have been able to if they had another child. Do you feel that way?
Absolutely. Last summer, we did a quick little trip to Washington, D.C., just Greg Jensen and I. And it's definitely not something I would have done with a baby in tow. Jensen's pretty good. He's a good little traveler. He's pretty go with the flow. So I try to remind myself that we're lucky that that is his personality type and he makes these things easy for us. It also, you know, it helps that he has cousins that he's close with and close in age with. I think that is huge. He has a lot of experiences that if we lived far away from family or, you know, if my sisters didn't have kids, then he wouldn't have those opportunities. So we try to travel with them when we can. We've done a few trips with both sisters and their kids, which is like the best. It's so much fun.
That's amazing. But, yeah, I was going to ask you because you said, you know, when you were talking about the pregnancy that you had and your whole family, like, so invested, and it was like everybody's baby. I was going to ask you, if you were close with your family. And
yeah.
So I'm glad that you brought up the cousins, and that's great for Jensen.
Yeah. Close with my family and lots of close friends. One of my best friends that I work with was so invested in that, you know, I would cry and she would cry. And it was, thank God for her though, and a couple other people that I work with in the midst of all of that. There, you know, there were times when I was like, probably should not have been at work. But at the time I was like, well, I don't want to sit home by myself either, and would kind of go to her room or one of my other friends' room and just kind of fall apart for a minute, and they'd get me back together and they've just been invaluable. Over the last couple.
Huge to have someone at work that knows what's going on, because during the day, I'm sure you got phone calls during the day. I'm sure that you were thinking about it during the day. How could you not be, you know? And I'm sure having those friends at work was invaluable.
Yeah.
Had any of them gone through it themselves?
No, nobody. That was really tough too, because, you know, I work in a school and it's 95% women.
Yeah.
And they're having more kids. They're pregnant. Every time you turn around the corner, there's a pregnant person. And, you know, just kids all day long. And no one that I work with has gone through IVF. And no one that I work with has not been able to have a second baby or a first baby when they want to. So that was really, really, really tough. A few of my coworkers did have miscarriages, which a couple I knew about. And then a couple, I feel like it kind of comes out of the woodwork when it happens to you. More people are like, oh, this happened to me. And you don't know that people have gone through that. And they want to reach out and be supportive, which was helpful.
Yeah, definitely. Like you said, coming out of the woodwork, it's incredible how much. I mean, I don't want to use the word incredible because it's not a good obviously, it's a very tough experience, but it's just astonishing how many people go through this. And people in my life, people I'm sure in your life, like you said, that you didn't know experienced it, and then it comes out. And I think even for me, when I had experienced miscarriages and opened up about it, people in my life and generations above me told, like, they would come out to me with their stories and say that their generation didn't talk about it. Did you have anything like that?
Yes. Yeah. I've had people that I, you know, worked with for 10 years that would come and say, let me tell you about my story. And I didn't know, you know, in 10 years of working with them, I hadn't heard these things. And they were like, it's just, some people just preferred not to talk about it. Some people at the time didn't feel like people talked about it at all.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a kind of an unfortunate club that you end up belonging to, but so supportive of each other and understanding.
Yeah, definitely. I wanted to get back to about the things that you're going to be doing with your son, but then also I love to ask people what their creative outlets are. Are there any things aside from traveling that you like to do with your son that you find to be creative or that you find to be special and things that got your mind off of infertility and loss while you were going through it?
Yeah, I read. I don't know why I didn't put that in my bio because I read like constantly, which I love. And that's kind of a nice for just for me, just something that I just do for me every night before I go to bed. Like if we have a night at home, it's relaxing, a nice little escape for me. And then everything else that we do is kind of Jensen centered. We are huge Bills fans. So during the football season, we kind of eat, sleep, and breathe the Bills, my son included. We try to go to at least one game and we watch them every weekend. And it's like a whole family affair. It's so much fun. And then we actually got a puppy. So in the midst of our infertility, we also lost our dog that we had had for 10 years. Yeah, it was a couple people at that point. They were like, I don't know how you're still standing. Yeah. Like this would have pushed me right over the edge.
Really, and a lot of people say that their pets, and I know that's true for me, their pets were so comforting for them during their infertility and loss journey. So, and I'm sure that was true for you before you lost your dog. And going through that, that's brutal.
Yeah, she was our first baby, and we had had her for about 10 years. We got her when she was 2, so that we had to put her down, you know, right around the same exact time as our last transfer didn't work. So it was kind of, it was brutal. We had the summer to kind of breathe and heal a little bit from that. And then I started looking for puppies. My husband was like, are you serious already? You know?
Yeah.
And then we fell in love with this one little pup that we ended up bringing home. And she's just like the light, you know, of our son's life. She loves him. He loves her. So that's been amazing. We're kind of, you know, working on training her and incorporating her into our lives and our home. Well, we also hike. Yeah, we have beautiful mountains up here in upstate New York, the Adirondacks. So I was a big hiker before, you know, I had Jensen. And then after I had Jensen, I finished up like it's called the Adirondack 46 High Peaks. So now that Jensen's getting a little bit older, we're hoping to be able to take him on some more hikes.
Oh, that's incredible. Is the 46, is it 46 miles?
Nope. It's 46 peaks. They're all like 4,000 feet or more. Most of them are more than that in elevation. So you kind of add those up and it takes a few years to get done. So it took a while. That was a blast. I loved doing that. And, you know, we've done a little bit of hiking with Jensen, but he's small and he requires a lot of snacks and breaks and not quite the same intensity, but still. It's still fun. And we have a nice little lake right by us, Lake Champlain, that we try to, you know, get out on when we can and spend time doing that.
Did you feel like being outside in nature and hiking and all that was comforting to you while you were going through infertility and loss?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The more we could get outside, especially last summer after everything kind of ended, was so helpful. My son and my husband are a little bit more of homebodies and on the weekend, you know, by the pool and, you know, out front and riding bikes and stuff if they could. And I was a little more like, okay, let's go and do this. Let's travel. So I feel like we're a nice kind of balance of each other. And the summer is just the perfect time for all of us to get all of that in.
Yeah, I'm sure it's beautiful there in the summer.
Yeah.
Where is your next travel location? What's on your next?
So we are actually going to Myrtle Beach to see my parents. They go there for 3 months out of the year. So we will be going there in April to visit them. In February, we had booked a trip with my sisters and their families. So all my nieces and nephews on my side and both of my sisters and their husbands. And we did a Disney cruise. But unfortunately, my husband, maybe 4 days before the trip, found out that he had a detached retina and had to have emergency surgery and couldn't go with us.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So kind of another little blow, you know, in the grand scheme of things is not, you know, the worst thing that we've been through in the last few years, but we were so looking forward to a nice little family trip and that changed.
You and your son still able to go?
Yeah, we still went. We weren't really sure if we were going to, but the plane tickets were non-refundable. So we went and like did a kind of a cousin's trip. Yeah. It was a blast. We loved it, but we're definitely looking forward to something with Greg too.
Yeah, is he okay now?
Yes. Yeah, good, he's good now.
Do you feel like what you went through with your infertility and loss, do you feel like that has better equipped you to handle things that come up with health or that come up unexpected or like anything.
Yeah.
Like
yeah. I feel like a lot of things that I do, I kind of look back and like, well, if I can go through that for 2 years, I can do that for however long we need to do it. I feel like the biggest thing though, is that it's just given me so much more of an appreciation for Jensen. I think, you know, everyone thinks their kid is, you know, a shining star in the light of their lives. But when you are only able to have one and you realize like, wow, I don't even really know how I got that one, it just makes you appreciate them so much more and want to spend so much time with them and maybe even have a little more patience when your patience is running thin.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think so many women are going to relate to that. Thank you so much for sharing that, because I think, yeah, so many women in this community have that feeling that they've articulated it in different ways, but I think that's a really important thing to say. So yeah. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, first.
So does Jensen know what you've been through?
I think he knows that there was something kind of medical going on, because it's inevitable with all of the shots and the needles and the medications and the appointments. I think in his world, I just have a lot of appointments and it just is what it is.
Yeah.
There was a time though, I have a picture of it when it was towards the beginning of IVF, when we were doing a lot of shots. He had like a baby doll and he was giving the baby doll a shot in her belly. We were like, wow, he really sees a lot more than you think.
How old was he at the time?
He was about 3 at the time.
Okay. It's amazing what they can pick up, like especially even as toddlers.
Yeah, he picked up a lot, and he's kind of a nervous kid, a little anxious. And a couple of times I would stop to get some medicine or something. And he finally was like, why do you get medicine? Like, why do you have all this medicine? And of course, I'm like, oh, well, I don't know how to handle this. But I was like, well, you know, people take medicine to feel better if they're sick or to make their bodies work in the best way. And of course he's like, wait, your body's not working? Oh no, is this what's wrong? What's going on? And I'm like, no, just making it work better. He's like, oh, yeah. Okay. So he's definitely kind of soaking it in his own way.
Positive.
Oh yeah.
Probably from all the books too.
Yes. Yes. Which I love that he's so intuitive, but it's also tough because he does ask, you know, well, why don't I have a baby brother or a baby sister? Like, what are we going to get one? When am I going to get one?
Ooh, conversation. Yeah. How do you answer those questions, or how do you have that conversation?
Yeah. So for a while, we kind of said, you know, maybe one day. Right now you have, you know, our first dog, Josie, and then she passed and we kind of made up some other things in the meantime. But more recently, he said, you know, if we ever get another baby, then we could be mommy, daddy, Bingo, and Bluey for Halloween. And I finally was like, you know, buddy, I don't think we're going to get have another baby. And he was like, well, why not? Like, it blew his mind that we just weren't going to. And I was like, well, you know, some people can have little brothers and sisters and some people can't. And he's pretty bummed about it in the moment, but being 5, he moves on pretty quickly, luckily. I do think getting our puppy, Tully, has been helpful. I think that's been a nice distraction. His cousins as well. But, you know, he's, like I said, kind of an anxious kiddo. And when our dog passed away, we talked a lot about death and what, you know, dying and happens to people and dogs and pets. And he has asked before if we were going to die. And I said, well, one day, you know, everyone will. And he got a little teary and said, well, I'm going to be all alone when you guys die. And that, the worst feeling of all of this. So.
I'm sure that was so hard of a question to hear.
Yeah, that was really tough. So he's, you know, a man with a plan. And we kind of just told him that, you know, that's not going to happen for a long time. But when it happens, plan, and you won't be alone. You have your cousins and this person and that person. But he's a thinker. So he knows those kinds of things and likes to know that, you know, it's going to be okay. And we will, you know, he'll figure it out.
How lucky he is to have you to be able to comfort him and to articulate those things to him and to be able to have the tough conversations in a way that he can understand. It's hard when a 5-year-old asks about death. My 5-year-old
asked about that too. And it's when you see that click. I remember when he asked about death for the first time, I didn't see it coming. Like, I did not see that question coming, because at five seems too young. But I think the more I talk to people who have 5 year olds, the more I'm realizing that's like when the question comes a lot.
It wasn't a question I thought we were going to have to talk about. And then I think after our dog passed away, we kind of were forced to.
Yeah.
The people around us, like I think the daycare provider at the time told him, you know, she's always going to be watching you. And so he was very comforted by that. That was very helpful for him. So we kind of say, you know, he kind of takes stuff like that. And he's like, well, it's okay that, you know, Josie died. She's still watching us. And he knows, you know, he'll ask a lot of questions about, well, this person's getting older and like what happens when Tully gets older. So it's not anything that anyone prepares you for. Like, hey, when you have a kid, make sure you know.
Yeah.
Make sure how to answer questions. Like, I would not prepared for that one at all.
Yeah. And arguably, like, you'll see, I know I've seen on Instagram or, you know, wherever, like scripts of what to say, but scripts just don't work for my kid. And it doesn't sound like they would work for yours either.
No. Too many follow-up questions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The follow-up questions. What is a question that Jensen's asked you recently that's been amusing or funny?
Oh my gosh, he asks so many questions all the time. Like going to bed, trying to avoid going to bed. He'll kind of, the other night he yelled to us, he goes, is there a pool at Grammy and Pops in Myrtle Beach? Where you went? Well, I need to come talk to you because I don't remember if it's in the front yard or the backyard. And I really need to know if I should bring my swimmies and my goggles, and just like, just always wanting to be prepared for
the
next thing. And he's so funny. He's having a sleepover actually with his cousins tonight, and he loves it and he has a blast and he loves them. And he's been doing sleepovers there since he was, you know, one, but he still gets nervous. He doesn't like to be away from us, and he thinks he's going to miss us and Tully. And he asked if he could bring a picture so he didn't forget us. And that one just, oh my gosh, my heart just exploded.
That's so, so sweet. He sounds like a cool kid. He sounds like a great kid.
He's an awesome.
So I wanted to wrap up with, what would you tell someone who is in this situation where they feel like they are going to walk away from their secondary infertility journey and embrace life with an only child? What would you tell that woman?
I think something that I wished I had heard more was that it sucks. This sucks. I see you and I see that this is awful and I am so sorry. I heard a lot of everything happens for a reason. You are lucky that you have one. Kind of insinuating that I didn't know that I was lucky to have Jensen. You know, there's a reason for it and it's probably for the best. That is just not what I needed to hear at the time. So if I could talk to someone that was in my position, I feel like I would just validate them and say, listen, I know that this sucks. This is not fair. Things don't always happen for a reason. Sometimes they're just really bad. Sometimes just bad things happen and there's not a reason for it. And I'm so sorry. And yeah, I know that's not super lifting and helpful.
It's, I think that saying that is so important. I don't think that everything needs to be uplifting. And I think that that is one of the things that is in society. I just feel like it's overarching is that everybody's really quick to want to make you feel better, and that everything happens for a reason. I know. I think that that's really, really, really hard for someone to hear, especially someone who's in your shoes who is walking away from something that was really devastating and they didn't get to have the baby at the end. And so I think it's really powerful that you're sharing this message to these women who might be listening, who might be on the brink of ending their infertility journeys and embracing their lives going forward with an only child. And listening to what that message and what you shared about the things that are very positive in your life and the experiences that you're going to get to have, I think is going to be so helpful for them to hear and hopefully so comforting. So I really, really appreciate you being on here and sharing your story. I know it probably was not easy to do, but I think it's so valuable that you wanted to share and that you came on. And I just want to thank you so much from the bottom of my heart.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me and for doing this. It's so important for people that are going through secondary infertility to know, you know, you're not alone. It does suck and it will get easier. You know, it'll get easier as you move through it and, you know, you'll find things that are fun and that bring you joy eventually. You know, you'll get there. Kind of have to dig yourself through the mud for a little bit, but you'll get there.
Thank you so much, Nikki.
Yes, thank you.
I hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Secondary Infertility Podcast. If you are interested in contributing to the continued production of this show, I've linked in the show notes a spot that you can go to donate a one-time contribution. I appreciate all the support that's been given to me so far. Another way that you can support my show is to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. Thank you so much. We'll see you in 2 weeks. I hope you found this episode of the Secondary Infertility Podcast to be meaningful. One of the best ways to support me and my show is to rate and leave a review. For more secondary infertility content, please come find me at Holding Both on Instagram. That's HOLDINGBOTH on Instagram. Thank you.